President Trump in China today to tackle trade and security.
The time for excuses is over. Now is the time for strength.
Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. President Trump is meeting Chinese leader Xi Jinping after calling for a complete halt to trade with North Korea. He's also pushing for a more favorable economic relationship with China. The BBC's Stephen McDonnell is outside Beijing's Forbidden City, where the meeting has been taking place.
Well, I think his message here is going to be pretty similar to what we heard from when he was in Japan and in South Korea, and that is that China and the US have a big trade imbalance, and he would say an unfair trading relationship. Now, of course, there's some debate about this and what is and isn't fair in trade, but, you know, for example, if he was to be raising the subject of the limits that foreign companies have on what they can invest in China, well, I think any independent observer would say that's true. I mean, you can't buy a Chinese coal mine if you're a foreign entity. Now, of course, the Chinese might say, well, that's because you're a developed Western country and, you know, it wasn't that long ago that we were poor, etc., etc.
Now, in Seoul, President Trump called specifically on China to curtail trade with North Korea. What's the Chinese view on that?
Well, the Chinese say we are fully implementing all of the UN Security Council sanctions imposed on North Korea. They argue we're taking on more of a burden than anyone else is because we're North Korea's biggest trading partner by a long shot. And you look, there are whole industries now which have just stopped. And so that's what Xi Jinping would be arguing to Donald Trump. Now, he might say, well, we want you to do more. And so this is where the debate will be. What's an appropriate level of pressure?
Stephen McDonnell in Beijing. Let's do the numbers. Hong Kong's Hang Seng closed down 87 points, or 0.3%. Shanghai stock index ended up 4 points, or 0.24%. Markets in Europe are down, led lower by Spain's IBEX. Now, today, more revelations from the trove of leaked tax documents known as the Paradise Papers. They've raised questions about the management of Angola's sovereign wealth fund. Here's the BBC's Andrew Walker.
When Angola created a fund 6 years ago to manage its oil wealth, there was controversy from the start. The man put in charge of it was the son of the president at the time, José Eduardo dos Santos. The job of managing those assets was given to Jean-Claude Bastos, a close friend of the son. It started with $5 billion, which would normally have been divided between several managers to spread the risk. An expert on sovereign wealth funds has told the BBC that the extent of control handed to one manager in this case was unusual. The papers the BBC has seen show the fund paid management fees of $90 million, of which $41 million was channeled through a series of offshore companies ultimately owned by Mr. Bastos. He and the fund say the fees were in line with global industry standards and that the managers were appointed after an objective process. In London, I'm the BBC's Andrew Walker for Marketplace.
It's 1 year since India withdrew 80% of its currency notes to try and force hidden untaxed cash into the banking system. The idea was to tackle corruption and to force Indians into a cashless economy. The BBC's Yogita Limaye has been to one village that tried to go cashless.
It's market day in Dhasai. In the main square, there are different kinds of shops. One man has a stall selling oils that relieve aches and pains. Outside the shop is a big plastic poster which proclaims that this is a cashless village. It was put up last December. The government organized a big event in the village. For the first time ever, people were shown how to use a bank card machine. But 1 year on, cash is king again. The government has not been able to persuade people here to go totally cashless. Swapnil Patkar, who owns the consumer goods shop and who was among the first to be given a bank card machine, explains why that's happened.
The main problem is that the network is often down. Then there are power cuts. So there are many times we can't use the card machine. Only about 15% of our transactions are conducted using it.
In a tribal village just a few kilometers from Dhasai, there's no bank in this tiny village. And because many people here are uneducated, they're not given credit or debit cards either. This means that they have to go to a branch to use the bank accounts that they have been given. So people here simply continue to use cash. In the fields around the village, workers are harvesting rice. Last year, the crop on many such farms was left standing because there was no cash to pay these labourers. That resulted in a big loss for many farmers, something that's reflected in India's economic growth number, which has dipped dramatically over the past 6 months. But economist Sajid Chinoy says that's just temporary.
We all want the economy to become formal, but the move from informality to formality is never smooth and linear.
In a country like India, where two-thirds of the population still lives in villages, progress is slow. Getting people into the banking system is one mighty task. Getting them to use it is another altogether. In the western Indian state of Maharashtra, I'm the BBC's Yogita Lamai for Marketplace.
Finally, more people applied to become e-residents of EU member Estonia than were born there this year. Before you run to your nearest embassy, e-residency just gives you the right to run your online business from there. In London, I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.